one of my teachers, Jess Walter, said to write to your obsessions. You have to believe in what you are writing, and you shouldn't be writing what anyone else thinks is high art. You have to be obsessed with it.
Welcome to In Writing with me, Hattie Crissell. Back in December, I was asked to review a debut novel called Such a Fun Age by an American novelist called Kylie Reid. Such a Fun Age is the tale of a black babysitter in her mid-20s, she's called Amira, and these two separate white people in her life who both badly want to impress her and look after her, even though she hasn't asked either of them to do that. So it's a really interesting novel about the guilt of white liberal people, the discomfort of being subject to somebody else trying to sort of define you and clumsily defend you, and also the uncomfortable dynamic between babysitters and their bosses, or employers and employees in a domestic situation where you're sort of like family, but you're not actually family. I loved it, and I thought it was really funny, very nuanced, and very revealing about how we live now. It's a wonderful debut. So when Kylie came to London in February, I was very excited to record the podcast with her. It was a very rainy day, and we met in the offices of her publishers on what felt like the zillionth floor. There was no lift, a lot of stairs, but even though we were very high up, there's still a lot of noise from the roadworks outside, so I apologise for that. Hopefully it's atmospheric rather than distracting. Kylie studied at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, which is probably the most prestigious creative writing master's course in the world, and she also got the Truman Capote Fellowship, which is pretty impressive. So we talked a lot about that and about the workshop model of creative writing, where your work is being continually read by your peers and you have to learn how to assess and absorb that feedback. Also, if you find that interesting, I would definitely recommend the Anna Hope episode from the first series of this podcast, because she attended a similar course in the UK and found it very valuable, and she's also very interesting on this. Kylie Reid is also brilliant on why she loves domestic stories and how she fleshes out fiction with well-researched fact. So I hope you enjoy it. Over to Kylie. So where do you work? Where do you do your writing?
It's a bit all over the place. For this novel, I was living in the South in Arkansas, and I would start at a coffee shop 5 days a week, and I would go there for 3 to 4 hours. And sometimes I would write, and sometimes I would just sit there and stare into space and figure out what I was trying to write. And then I was living in Iowa when I completed the novel, and I would write in my bedroom, and I would write on the floor. I wrote most of this novel on the floor, but I do not support that, because now I'm going to a chiropractor to figure out how to right those wrongs. So I think it honestly depends on the season and where I'm at. If I have a lot of work, I work in a different place than if I was just starting something out. But I've been going to coffee shops lately. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't have a kind of study in your home that's that you work in routinely?
I do not. I don't even have a desk.
Really?
I don't know what it is. I do a lot of, I was on the floor for so long, and now I can't do that. So I'm kind of figuring out what that means for this next novel. Yeah.
So you live in Philadelphia.
I do.
You're writing at the moment mainly in coffee shops. Mm-hmm. Is there one particular coffee shop, or you're moving it around?
I do spend some time at La Colombe in Philadelphia. There's another one called Reanimator.
What are you looking for in a good location for you to get some work done?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think the biggest thing is white noise. It can't have too few people. Because I just get too distracted by their conversation. But there's a lot going on that helps me a lot. I wrote a lot of this novel at a gym in Iowa. They have a really nice rec center for all the students to go to, and you get membership when you're a student, and there's really great white noise where the basketball court is. Right. So I would write a lot there.
That's crazy. I don't think I've spoken to anyone who's done quite as much of their writing in a public place as that.
I love it a lot. Yeah.
Do you listen to music or anything, or you're just...
No. No phone, no music, just trying to focus on what I'm trying to do. Yeah.
What is your kind of writing routine? Do you write every day?
Right now I'm on book tour, and so that has definitely thrown a lot of changes into the schedule. I love writing every day. I love being at home and having like a habit. I like to go to the gym and then go write for about 3 hours in the day, and then I write again for maybe an hour and a half in the afternoon. But if I have a whole body of work, then I'll write all day long and just keep going over it and over it. So I think it depends on where I'm at in the process of whatever I'm writing. But I love, if I had my way, I would write every morning.
Yeah.
I think, especially for this novel too, the process was writing for an hour and a half, and then I go for a walk, have a little snack, and do it all over again. And I would repeat that maybe three times.
Is that kind of the limits of your attention? Like an hour and a half of really good work?
Of churning out actual pages and word count, yes. But for editing, I can go for hours. If I'm reading my work, then maybe I lose track of time a little bit.
I see.
Yeah.
Is there a kind of daily word count that you're hoping to hit when you're writing?
I never work with word counts. I think it's more of a list of something I'm trying to achieve. I'll say I need to get to this point, or I need to work on this scene, or I need to, some days it's just I need to figure out where everyone at this table is sitting for everyone to make sense. And some days I go and sing, I'm going to get this whole scene done. And then all I end up doing is getting everyone inside the house. That right. took way longer than I thought it would take. I have a list of goals, but they don't have word counts on them as much.
I see. So it's more like plot.
Yeah. Points. Yeah, exactly. And as for writing every day, I should add too that I'm constantly emailing myself every day of lines of dialogue I heard or something I want to uncover. So there's writing going on every day, but just in different mediums, I guess.
Yeah. I see. Okay. So when you're working on such a fun age, did you have a kind of plan in place before you started the writing? Had you plotted out what the scenes were going to be, or how do you
A little bit of everything. That? I got the idea for it when I was living in New York City. And at that time, it was just, I knew I wanted a very delicate and awkward relationship between three people. That's all I knew. And then I ended up moving to Arkansas for the year, and the plot kind of took a little bit more shape, and I liked to draw it out and what ways it could go, and I knew a little bit more. And then by the time I moved to Iowa, I had a whole entire plot list except for the ending. I did not plot out the ending. And so it was just saying, okay, what scenes am I most excited about? If you're dreading writing this scene, maybe you shouldn't be writing it, those things. And there were changes, but I do like to draw out the entire plot first.
That's really interesting what you say about if you're dreading writing the scene, maybe you shouldn't be writing it. Like, what do you do about those scenes that become kind of the thing that's hanging around your neck and worrying you? And is that the point where you think, okay, maybe this scene just isn't working?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think if you're not super excited to write it, or if the plot is hinging on it, maybe it could be moved into another scene, or maybe it should happen in a different place. There's a scene in Such a Fun Age where Amira and Alex meet at Amira's apartment. And for probably 2 years, I had imagined that scene happening in Alex's house. But when it came time to write it, I said, there's no way Amira would leave her apartment in this situation. And so that made me more excited to write it, because before I was kind of dreading it a little bit. So yeah, I think there's something about scenes you're dreading writing. Maybe you shouldn't be writing them that way.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I'm a journalist, and occasionally you write a feature and it's just not working, and you just can't quite make the argument pull together, and then eventually you come to the realization that that's because it's not a good idea for a feature. Yeah. Like, it doesn't work.
Yes. I think first thought is not always best thought. And whenever I'm planning things out, if my writing is going a little bit too according to plan, it makes me feel like I'm not really listening to what the story is telling me to do. Something has to go wrong a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And that doesn't freak you out when something goes wrong?
I mean, I freak out, yes. but it makes me feel like I'm listening to the story a little bit better. Like if everything's going too well, I'm like waiting for the other shoe to drop a little bit.
So. Right. Let's go back a little bit. When did you first start? I mean, when do you remember first writing?
Since I was very little. I was filling up notebooks when I was six, maybe. I just thought it was a hobby. And so I would write like manuscript length things, but I would just keep them very private.
That's amazing.
And, yeah. Just for a long time. Yeah.
Stories.
Lots of stories. I would do little series in third grade about me going back in time and things like that. Just lots and lots of stories.
Was there somebody in your life who encouraged that?
I had lots of teachers who were very kind to me and would read my short stories that I was not assigned to write and things. But at the time, I think all growing up, I think I was so interested in movies and theater and storytelling. And so I thought that maybe that would be the path I would take. But yes, lots of teachers encouraging reading and writing. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that you're interested in movies because I know you studied acting.
I did,
for a while. Do you think that was all kind of linked to your interest in storytelling?
I think for sure, yes. And I think it definitely inspired my interest in the rhythms of dialogue. I was reading plays for so long in college, and I'm sure that my writing is affected by reading so many different kind of melodies and rhythms of how people communicate. And that's there's a lot of dialogue in my novel. I'm sure it came from there.
So at what point did you decide that creative writing was something you wanted to pursue? Because you did the acting, and then you ultimately went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. So how did that journey happen?
I was in my early 20s and slowly realizing that writing was my favorite thing to do, and I wanted to do that more than I wanted to do anything else. And so I took a writing class at Gotham Writers' Workshop in New York City, and a teacher really encouraged me to keep going. And I think that for most writers, when you decide you want to do it professionally, it means doing a lot of other jobs to assist in that. And so I was still being a nanny. I was a receptionist for a long time, and I decided to apply to grad school. And the first year I applied, I didn't get in anywhere I applied. And then the second year I did. And I feel like graduate school was where everything kind of gelled together and made sense.
Right. There's this great tradition in the US of creative writing schools, courses, and that is something that's really only developed in the UK over the last 20 years or so. I think there was for a long time a bit of an idea that writing was something you couldn't learn, like you were either good at it or you weren't, kind of thing, which I think has definitely changed now in the UK. But what do you see as the role of those kind of programs?
Oh man, I have so many opinions on these programs.
Amazing.
I had a fantastic experience in the MFA program that I was in. I think that the biggest thing that those programs can do is give you time and space to figure out your thoughts and really make a collection of work that I know I couldn't have made when I was working 50 hours a week as a receptionist. So the time and space is wonderful. And I also, they usually come along with teaching, and I wanted to teach as well. So that was a big pull for me as well. I feel very strongly that no one, how talented they are, how amazing they are at writing, should go into debt at one of these programs trying to be a writer, because it's such a financially precarious career. But I know for me, the IR Writers Workshop was amazing to give me space to figure out my thoughts for 2 years.
Yeah, and you got the Truman Capote Fellowship, which must have helped on that side of things.
It helps so much. I mean, in Iowa is a very inexpensive place to live. It's quiet, and there's so many other writers around you at the same time, and everyone's doing the same thing. And so taking myself out of a big city and going somewhere like that was wonderful for me.
Yeah, and my understanding is that it is, you know, one of the best courses in the country, if not in the world. And it's, you know, I had heard of it in London. And
amazing.
Of course, there's the, for anyone who's watched Girls, Hannah Horvath went off to Iowa. So it's prestigious. And also I, you know, you can't trust Wikipedia, but according to Wikipedia, 17 graduates have won Pulitzer Prizes, which is impressive.
I think I'd believe that.
Yeah. it's probably more. So what do you think makes that particular place so special?
So Iowa is the founding fathers of the workshop method of bringing work in the week before, having all of your classmates read it, and then during workshop, everyone discusses your piece while the writer remains silent and just takes notes. And it's a
place. Which sounds horrible, by the way, but I'm sure it's very useful.
Some workshops are terrible, and some of them are wonderful, and you just want to run home and keep going. And I think that the opportunity to hear people talk about your work outside of you is really exciting. And sometimes it's really frustrating. It depends on, it's a mixed bag. If your teacher is really engaged, or if you have, you know, a bad egg in your classroom, all of those things contribute. But I had two professors in classes that were wonderful. I workshopped this novel there, and you just see it as something else outside of you. And the best teachers have always said, you know, how can we make this novel where it is the best it can be? And I truly believe my novel got better because of workshop.
Right. Are there ever points where, you know, you come back from one of those sessions and somebody has not liked something and you disagree with them and you have to decide to stick to your guns and go ahead with it anyway?
100%.
Because presumably you can't just blow this way and that with everyone's opinions.
No. I think that that's why the numbers work out. As soon as everyone is saying this chapter was confusing, you know something has to change with that chapter. But of course, there are comments that people give, and you just have to say, you know, I trust my gut on this one. I got comments, and sometimes comments that you disagree with will still help you change things that need to be changed. I had comments about this novel saying, you know, why is everyone talking about money? It makes me feel really uncomfortable. And that was something that I wanted to keep. I wanted to keep that uncomfortableness, but I wanted to craft the language and maybe pull back on the dollars and cents, but use other words that reflect people talking about money.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think money being an uncomfortable topic is a reason not to put it in a novel. That's exactly why
I agree.
Great territory for a novel.
I think so too.
Did it take courage to put yourself in that environment?
I mean, it's nice to know that everyone else is a bit nervous as well. But yeah, it's terrifying putting your work in front of other people, especially something that you've just created recently. It's really scary. But I feel like most things that I've done that have come up the biggest rewards take a little bit of that bravery at first. And, you know, sometimes you go home really upset and crying, and sometimes you go home really encouraged. So, yeah, just depends.
At what point did you start writing Such a Fun Age?
I started writing it in 2015, very loosely. And I was still...
While you were at the Iowa Writers'
Workshop? No, I was in New York City. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So probably 2 years before. By the time I got to Iowa, I brought in maybe 100 pages with me to Iowa.
Did you have to submit that as part of your application? Did you have to submit something as part of your...
I did. You have to do a big application submission, but I did not submit this novel. I had actually given it to a friend who told me that it was not ready at the time that I should start over. So I submitted other short stories, but I kept working on it. And I think by the time it was second semester, I had about 200 pages of it. I just kept working at it.
That's incredible. Yeah. How long in total did you spend writing this book?
I think a total of 3 years. And then once you sell it, there's still that huge editing process with your editor and copy editors and everything. So yeah, total, I guess it's 3.5.
Okay. At what point did you sell it?
I sold it the summer after my first year at grad school.
Amazing. So you were still in the program and mm-hmm. Wow, that must have felt incredible.
Yes. It was a very out-of-body experience, and I think that, you know, it's a dream. It's everything you want it to be. At the same time, you're in school and still trying to write and whatnot, so overwhelming and wonderful is how I would describe that. Yeah.
When you look back, are there ways in which you think being at the Iowa Writers Workshop shaped this book specifically? Are there key things that you think were changed by that experience?
Oh yeah. I was with Pulitzer Prize winner Paul Harding. He's one of those 17. He was the teacher for my novel workshop, and he was wonderful. And there were so many things that I take from his teachings. There were so many scenes that he and my classmates would say, you keep referring to this scene, why don't you just write it and let us see it? And so that's where the entire backstory came out of with this book. Or we talked a lot about how memory works and how you don't have to always give the reader exactly how it happened. You just have to show how it happened for these characters. And so I think that my sense of point of view changed a lot with things I learned from Iowa. I also think that I got a little bit braver in writing dialogue exactly as it is said and heard. And I think that that contributed to my style. Style is a big thing that I think you learn in graduate school. I came in knowing what I wanted to write about, and I think that I had space to learn like how I wanted to show those things.
That's really interesting. I think your style is so lovely. Oh, and the dialogue, as you say, feels very natural. And I was I don't know how you will feel about this, but I was reminded when I was reading it of Curtis Sittenfeld, who
I'm a big fan of hers.
Love.
Yeah.
And I think both of you are very good at writing very smart stuff in a very unpretentious way.
That's my favorite category. I love smart, accessible, and not intimidating, but also not hackneyed either.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's something very off-putting about writing that is trying to show how clever it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that's what workshop does, is like really put all of your bad habits out on the table. And there were moments where my teacher said to someone, you're trying to show off right now and the story is suffering. And the best workshops are when you're not being workshopped, but you realize, oh my gosh, I do that too. And you write down a little note so you fix it out. I think we all have these ways that we try and show off with our writing a little bit. But yeah, those are my favorite types of books too, that are really true and smart and unpretentious.
Mm. What were you striving for with such a fun age?
The biggest thing was a gripping story that people can't stop reading. That's my favorite thing, when I keep saying, okay, one more chapter, just a little bit more.
And it is like that.
But also, I wanted something that was so familiar and true that it's uncomfortable and sad and funny all at the same time. Funny sad is probably my favorite category of feeling, and that's what I was going for.
And it is very funny. I found a lot of the stuff with the character of Alex so uncomfortable to read. And so funny, and also quite poignant. And I think you did such a good job with making those characters multi-layered, and nobody's all bad. Everybody's kind of trying to be good, but getting it wrong. It's beautifully done.
Oh, thank you. Really, I think that's more common to real life. That I think it's a bit of a romantic idea that bad people would present themselves as bad and that we just stay away from them. That is a fantasy, and I don't think that's how it works.
No, if only that is how it works.
Yeah.
And is that what you're striving for as a writer in general, or are there kind of themes that are particularly going to be important to you in your career, do you think?
I think that themes of class will always be important to my novels, because I'm interested in it as a person. I think that layering a work of fiction with polemics and lessons kind of takes away from the magic of fiction, and everything that I've ever loved that's ever changed the way that I thought didn't tell me how to think. It just kind of sat with me uncomfortably for a long time. I think that themes of class warfare and themes of failed allyship are really important to me to cover. And I also think that I think relaying how people truly are in all of their awkward tics and dialogues and bad decisions is really important for me to show. I think that I learn about myself when I watch other people's flaws.
Oh, that's interesting. The book's been really successful. I mean, it only came out a few months. When did it come out in the US?
New Year's Eve.
Oh my God. So that we're now in late February.
Yes.
Incredibly successful, really widely reviewed, a bestseller. You also sold the film and TV rights, what, like a year before it came out?
I did,
to Lena Waithe. Is that how you say it, Lena Waithe?
Yes, yes, yeah. You got it.
So what has it felt like to have that kind of success with your debut novel? I mean, that must be quite a dramatic life development.
Yes, I'd say yes for sure. I think there's two big things that have really changed in that. It's been really comforting to know that other people obsess over very normal domestic storytelling matters in the same way that I do. Like, this isn't a book that's like the Da Vinci Code or Star Wars. This is about a babysitter and a mom. And the fact that people have been drawn to it, from the dialogue to the toddlers to the, you know, very, you know, almost petty drama, is really comforting that storytelling is hitting home. And so I think that makes me, I thought it would make me really nervous for my second novel whenever that happens, but I think it makes me more excited that I now have the research potentials and time to go even deeper and try it and make an even better novel next time. I hope in 10 years I look back saying, oh my gosh, that was terrible. I'm so much better now. That's the goal. Yeah.
What over the years has been your biggest struggle as a writer?
Probably for many years not showing people my writing. I do think that writing gets so much better when you have so many more eyes on top of it. I struggle a little bit with structure of a novel. I'm great with plot, but when to deploy information to a reader is something that, like, I don't really have in my brain as well. But I'm very lucky that my editor is wonderful at structure, and so I might just not get good at it and just let her keep doing that part for me. I like to present her work, and she tells me where it should go and when. Yeah.
Okay. And what are the kind of, can you think of what the best lessons would be that you've learned over the years about how to be a good writer?
Yeah. One of my teachers, Jess Walter, said to write to your obsessions. Especially with writing a novel, seeing how long it takes to publish something, you have to believe in what you are writing, and you shouldn't be writing what anyone else thinks is high art. You have to be obsessed with it, which seems quite obvious, but...
No, I think that's super encouraging, because I think we probably often feel... Oh, is this a good enough subject for a novel? Or are other people going to think this is too trivial? Or...
Right. You have to be obsessed with it. If you're not obsessed with it, then the truth of it will not come out. And then reading nonfiction, too, has been the biggest, like, game changer for me as far as my writing is concerned. As far as getting all of the other facts around something solid, I feel like it makes my fiction ring more true.
So what would be something that you read nonfiction-wise in the writing of such a fun age that was particularly useful?
This sounds silly, but just little things like in the beginning scene, there's eggs thrown at a house and they call the police. I did so much research into, would you call the police? Would your insurance cover it or not cover it? How quickly would the window get fixed? Would you have to file a police report? All of those little things that my characters end up researching. Names are really important to me, and the meanings of names are really big. I also interviewed a lot of moms about what things that their children say. All those little things, I think, feed into the novel.
Right, to give it a really real feeling backdrop.
And at the time, I wasn't living in Philadelphia, so I took a lot of trips there just to make sure I was getting the feel of it right.
Yeah. When you look back over your writing career so far, what do you feel proudest about?
Oh, rejections are not easy. So probably...
Did you have rejections?
Oh my goodness. Tell me
about those.
I couldn't even count all of them. The first 9 graduate school rejections all in 1 year, that was rough. It's hard to know, you know, maybe this isn't for me. So many short story rejections, so many days where I got a good rejection. I don't know if you've had any of those.
Is that where they kind of encourage you to keep trying?
Yeah. This isn't right for us, but try us again, or this almost made it. And then you just live off of that one sentence for the next 4 months. So yeah, lots of rejections in between.
But that's what you're proudest of?
I think I'm proudest of going past them and not submitting the same stories as is. I think I'm proud of taking the feedback I've gotten and changing the work that I feel proud about. Editing is hard, but I think that makes writing really great.
That was Kylie Reed, author of Such a Fun Age. Please come and talk to me on Twitter or Instagram if you want to chat about this episode or any other. You should be able to just search my name and I should pop straight up, but you can also use the hashtag InWriting. See you next time.